Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Off and rolling. It is game week here in Memphis. Also, for you people that'll be in Oxford, Knoxville, it is week one of the college football season. August 25th, 2025 is the date. Welcome in to the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, Gabe Kuhn, on X at G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside, as always, executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show. That'd be Connor Dunning on X at CDunning929. Connor, happy game week, brother.
Happy game week, Gabe. We've made it. We have officially made it.
Week zero, I felt the feeling. Week one, completely different. Three top 10 matchups, Alabama, Florida State, all of the local teams in action. Can't beat it. And you know what? This week's going to be special for me. It's going to be very exciting. One, family in town. I will have my dad, my little sister, and my mother in town. Two, it'll be the first game that Myers, at 9 months old, will be able to attend in the regular season for the University of Memphis. We have a Memphis baby. There's no doubt about it. And then three, the 2014 Miami Beach Bowl winning team. The start of all of this. A lot of my former teammates. That was the first year I started. I started at center that year. We won 10 games, went 10-3, won the Miami Beach Bowl and the Brawl. We will be recognized at the Chattanooga game coming up on Saturday. So, it really is a special, relatively emotional week for me. I can't lie to you. And I'm excited to see a lot of my former teammates. Because I know the reception and the fans will definitely bring it for us. Because that, I think there's an understanding of that being the team that started it all. That being the team that got over top. Justin Fuente's third team. Paxton, I'm not sure if he'll be there. Tried calling him. We'll see. We may get a special showing of Paxton Lynch, but that should be really fun coming up on Saturday.
It's going to be awesome. Now, I have a question for you. Myers is going to be there. It's going to be his first game. Can he play defensive back yet for Memphis? Is he able to run out there?
He may be the size of a defensive back in a couple of years. He's my son. He's growing pretty fast. I don't think right now. Soon. But for those that did not see over the weekend, as Memphis gets ready to play Chattanooga coming up on Saturday, University of Memphis football Twitter, I guess is the way to put it out, and their site put up a open tryout, a walk-on tryout, week of the game, which is just not common. And it was specifically for defensive backs. Specifically a walk-on tryout for University of Memphis students that are defensive backs heading into the first week of the season. That doesn't, Connor, can I just say that doesn't feel great? It's not a good thing.
When you're seeing a tweet from your favorite football team, the first week of the season, tryouts for defensive back, a very important position, not necessarily what you want to see.
We'll have some former 2014 defensive backs. Maybe there's a year of eligibility left.
Can they suit up?
Who knows? Got to have some eligibility left, and we'll figure it out. But, yeah, that's not a great thing. Luckily, here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, we will have Ryan Silverfield coming up on Thursday. Every single week, throughout the season, into bowl season, all that. So I feel like that's something worth asking, right? I think the obvious answer there, though, why they put that out is Cortland Marsh gets hurt. That's part of it. I'm not going to hide from that. Cortland Marsh gets hurt for the season. Your reserve strong safety. You have to elevate guys that would otherwise be on the non-travel team to the travel team. And they would normally be scout team players. You need to find some scout team players. I don't think, this is my hope, but I don't think they're going and telling University of Memphis students to try out for DB to start them coming up against Chattanooga. That's just a fair assumption. Is that a fair assumption, Connor?
I think that's a fair assumption because the only other option there is disaster. if they're looking for real bodies to get minutes on the field and in the first week of the season is not what you would like. But no, it is very obvious. It seems like the injury caused them to have to elevate some people, which left some room open on the practice squad, the scout team. So they need somebody to fill bodies so that team one and team two can get reps against them. That feels like the obvious answer, and a lot of times the obvious answer is the correct answer.
Yep. Now, back to 2014 team really quick, Miami Beach Bowl. More resounding win. The actual win in the Miami
fight.
Beach Bowl.
It's the fight.
Fight.
It's the fight.
Without question.
It is because
it took two OTs to win the game.
I was watching that bowl game, and it was awesome to see y'all win the bowl game. And then there was just a pause. And all of a sudden, you see BYU trying to scrap with Memphis. And I remember I was in a bar watching it with a ton of people. And all of us looked around and said, oh, this is a one-sided fight.
Yeah, why?
Why in the hell would you try to fight Memphis, BYU? You're gonna get your asses kicked.
Why would?
And then I don't remember who it was.
The Mormons fighting a rough and tumble,
up and coming
Memphis team. Bad.
I don't remember who it was.
Bad fight to pick.
But I seem to remember the camera just cutting to one of the Memphis players, just holding a BYU player by the face mask and pulling him and just slapping him.
Yep,
it was a smart play. He didn't go fist. Just slapping the side of his helmet.
So I've been on record on multiple occasions to talk about this fight, to explain how it started. The guy that you saw doing that was Martin Ifedi. No doubt. Defensive end, first team all-conference guy.
I'm not sure.
I think he might be the sack leader at the University of Memphis, or at least in the top three.
I can
have to
up.
Check that. Check my facts there. But Martin was graduating after that game. He was going to go off to the NFL. He ended up being a seventh-round pick to the Rams. The center for BYU pushed him as soon as DeShawn Terry caught the interception. He pushed him in the back. Martin, not having anything to lose, turns around immediately, throws the center directly on the ground. To be fair, like Martin's 6'4", 280 at this time, and just one of the strongest guys on the team. Throws the center on the ground and proceeds to just uppercut him into oblivion. That's how it all started. I don't know if Martin will tell you the same story. Maybe he'll say the center started it. Martin didn't have to react that way. I will say this. I think he chose to react that way. But that's who you saw getting his licks off.
That's fantastic. I also remember because it was such a big deal that Memphis was in a bowl game like that and had a winning season like that. A lot of people went to the game. Remember, they were bussing people down to the game. One of my buddies went, and I don't remember. I don't know if you remember, but there was a Memphis fan after the fight, and y'all just whooped BYU's ass. Ass kicking on the field.
If it was a game score, it would be that game that's 63-7, but the 7 came late. Remember Kai Nakua, Puka Nakua's cousin, punched Alan Cross in the face and drew a little bit of blood. But that was late, and it was a garbage time. It was a garbage time score, I guess is the best way of putting it.
But my buddy, Steve, he was holding a flag, a Memphis flag, over the tunnel where BYU had to walk. And apparently the things that were being said by the student,
did they grab the flag?
They ripped the flag out of his hand, and they took the flag.
Shout out Steve, though.
Shout out
Steve.
I
like that move. That's well done. That's well done. Add insult to injury.
I'll never forget sitting in the bar, and we were watching the game, and we were celebrating because y'all won. And then just – seeing a commotion, and then realizing, why? Why would they pick a fight with Memphis? It's just, it's the most, it's one of the most lopsided fights I can remember seeing in
a sport. It was stupidity.
Then when they got to him just slapping the side of his head.
No, we did have a lot of guys suspended, and we had a guy swing a helmet. So it wasn't, I wouldn't say it's the most proud moment in the history of the University of Memphis, but I think fans remember it very fondly.
We love it. Like it's, I think that the fans love it.
It's not like a black mark. It's not like a bad memory for people, which I do appreciate.
Martin, it seems like Martin is the sacks leader, according to Wikipedia, for Memphis.
Yep, for sure.
22 and a half sacks.
Yeah. Sacks leader starting the fight in the Miami.
Bryce Huff is tied for fifth.
Yeah. Tied for fifth?
Yeah.
Who else is on that list?
It is Martin, Tremont Lawless,
okay.
Marquise Bowling, Marlon Brown, Tim Harris, and Bryce Huff.
That makes sense.
That's the top five.
That makes sense. Now, on top of all that, we have 3 hours of talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We're going to open on week zero and recap what we saw and some lessons we learned from the first week of college football. We'll also look ahead to week one. We have 3 top 10 matchups. We have Alabama, Florida State, and we just have a loaded slate coming up for week one. Should be very, very exciting. As far as guests are concerned, 5 o'clock, David Cobb will join the show from CBS Sports, and we will get all the college football you need. And then 6 o'clock, Harold Grader will join the show as well. They just had their Distinguished Citizen Award dinner where they were – they gave it to Vern Lundquist, so that was last night. We'll talk about that, and then we'll get into what we learned from week zero and what we can learn moving forward in week one. Blitz at 6:30, trip around the NFL at 5:30. We were absolutely loaded up. Now, week zero, we know what the main attraction was. It was Ireland, Iowa State, Kansas State. Iowa State wins 24-21 behind a really, really good effort from their run game. And quite frankly, their defense. They were able to get off the field on third down, and they were able to get off the field on fourth down as well. There were 2 fourth downs that really shifted the game as drastically as possible. Late in the game, while Kansas State was trying to mount a drive to tie, it was late third quarter, Avery Johnson... This was as the fourth quarter got going. It was 4th and 1, Kansas State 30. Avery Johnson runs the ball, design quarterback zone. He gets close to the first down line. They had to measure it. They had to review it, but he didn't quite get there. Iowa State was able to take over from there, and then they got a touchdown to take a 10-point lead and keep the game at arm's length. It was 24-14 at that point. And then the other fourth down that really mattered, that got Iowa State over the top where they were able to knee out the game. 4th and 3, Kansas State 16. Instead of opting to just kick the field goal, go up by 6, make Kansas State drive the entire field with 2 minutes to go, Rocco Beck takes it and throws the ball to Carson Hansen, his running back, for a 15-yard gain, gets down to the Kansas State 1. Iowa State at that point, no timeouts, so they just kneeled the game out. 3 straight kneel downs, game over. This was a really, really tough loss, Big 12 loss for Kansas State. It's going to take a year of work and a short memory to be able to make up the ground that was lost in Big 12 play from this loss. But for Iowa State, very, very impressive. Did not throw the ball that well, but Rocco Becht, very good competitor, made the right decisions with the ball, I thought. He was 14 for 28, not good completion percentage, 183, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. He was still sacked 4 times. But Carson Hansen had 71 yards as one of the running backs. Abu Sama had 43, and Rocco Becht ran for 18 yards. This was a great win to start the year, and they put themselves in the driver's seat, in my opinion, to be there at the very end with a week zero win. And that's about as good of a situation as you could possibly be in if you're Iowa State in that game.
Yeah, I mean, we went over their schedule last week, and I don't think they play another ranked opponent for many, many weeks until toward the end
of
the season.
We'll see what Iowa looks like to start the year, because I will say the AP tends to give them credit.
Sure. As of now, they don't play another ranked opponent for a while, so they were able to take advantage of the one opportunity early in the season that they were going to have. It was, to be honest, it was a fun game. It was exactly what we thought it was going to be. A relatively low-scoring game until the fourth quarter. You had some action there, but I it was 50.5 was the over/under for the game, and it was just ugly,
ugly football
in the first half. Fumbles everywhere. It was kind of like raining there. There was a fog because of the fireworks, but also because they were in Dublin. It was a really fun first week zero game to watch. And it was ugly, ugly football until all of a sudden it wasn't. And the quarterbacks were kind of dialed in. Yep. And it was a fun back and forth in that fourth quarter with an exciting ending.
Yeah, I think it's pretty simple why Kansas State ended up losing this game. They made more mistakes.
Yes.
Two turnovers to Iowa State's one. They had six penalties to Iowa State's one. They just did not execute the way they should. Avery Johnson, though, I want to give credit where credit's due. I saw a kid... a sophomore, take a step in the right direction. I thought that was a very well-played game by him. It doesn't look the best all the time, just that five-step drop, getting through his progressions, reading it out, making something happen. But the deep ball was dialed in, had a couple of deep touchdowns, including a 65-yarder. I thought Avery Johnson looked pretty good, and that's something that they can take with them going through the rest of the season. Now, with Avery Johnson, not everything about the performance there in Ireland was great. His brother and his dad, Mark is his dad, I believe Anthony is his brother, were caught on camera having a fist fight after the game. A actual fist fight. I believe his brother was on top of his father, and they were scrapping with each other. Kansas State ended up responding. There were statements put out on behalf of the Johnson family. That is not a good thing. Now, I don't know what leads to that. Maybe it's they didn't have Bush Light, they had Guinness all day, they were already in a bad mood.
I was
going to
say, that would be my first look.
No idea. But a brother and a dad fighting each other after a loss that Kansas State took in week zero in Ireland. Not great. Not great.
What do you think's worse for Avery Johnson, the loss or having to get on social media while you're in the locker room, checking things out, trying to cool down, and all of a sudden you realize your dad and your brother got in a scrap, and then you have a 9-hour flight home?
Wouldn't be fun.
Wouldn't be fun. Which is worse, losing the game or the post game?
I think losing the game. Dad and brother, get over it. Shake hands. Kiss and hug. Be family. I'm still trying to wreck my brain over, and I haven't seen exactly what led to it. Wreck my brain over what truly brings a son and a dad to blows, like actual fists being thrown. What does that? I know you just took a tough loss. I know there's some tough feelings because of that. Having taken the flight to watch that loss, 9-hour flight. But I don't know about you, Connor. I have never even thought one time, as mad as I've ever been at my dad, I've never thought one time to put my hands on him.
No.
I just, that blows me away. It really does. It's an unfortunate thing that happened, though.
What's unfortunate is they lost the game. But I think that Avery Johnson, like you said, looked really, he had a couple of flashes of true potential in the week zero game. And instead of talking about that, we're having to talk about his brother and his dad getting in a fight. That's the unfortunate part of it, because I think it was a really good game from him. In the fourth quarter, like, he was pretty dialed in. He made some big throws. And ultimately, you know, his defense didn't help him out too much. They turned the ball over early in the game. I don't know. I thought it was pretty good. If you're a Kansas State fan, I think that you lost the game, you had to deal with the fight, but Avery Johnson was a bright spot.
Yep, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. And I thought both defenses competed, but the whole idea of the playing surface, that came into account, no doubt. People slipping all over the place.
Yes. Well, they just couldn't hold on to the ball. Because yeah, a couple of the fumbles were like, they weren't punched out. They were just kind of swiped out.
I'm getting kind of annoyed with that. Whether it's the NFL going over to London or going to Brazil or this, where you're going over to Ireland in college football. I'm a little bit frustrated that every time we have a game like that that is played internationally, the playing surface is a massive conversation. I'm sick of it. I don't think the playing surface needs to be a swing factor especially an early season game like this, but a swing factor in a football game. And I know we had it in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago where they completely fudged it up, but we have to be better. We have to think ahead about these things and decide what's best, because you risk injury, you don't get the best possible product. I'm tired of that playing surface conversation continually being a conversation. Now, also in week zero, we had a game that I was looking forward to, looking close to. Only got to watch about a half because I did not have Mountain West Network. I had to make some calls and get through it. But UNLV, who some around the country, national writers and otherwise, say could be the group of six representative in the college football playoff. UNLV has a massive struggle win against Idaho State at home, an FCS opponent, in Dan Mullen's opening game. And Connor, I don't know if you probably didn't get to watch because it's Mountain West Network. I don't know if you've seen the statistics.
I've seen the stats.
UNLV's defense.
Yikes.
Absolutely miserable. Something has to change, and it has to change immediately. Couldn't get anybody after the passer. Their defensive backfield could not hold up. Their front line, their front seven, didn't hold up very well. They allowed Idaho State to put up 555 yards of total offense. Their quarterback, Jordan Cook, threw for 380. Their running back, Dayson Brooks, 18 carries, 132 yards, and two touchdowns. UNLV, as much as people believe in them, as much as they've been hyped with Dan Mullen taking over, a good situation that Barry Odom left behind. The talent they brought in, which is led by Michigan transfer quarterback who didn't even throw the ball very much, Alex Orji. Anthony Calandria is the real starter from Virginia. As hyped as this program has been coming into the regular season, I think this game showed me a lot in regards to that hype needs to go away immediately until they prove that they can stop somebody. Because if you look at their schedule coming up, it gets hard, at least the next couple of weeks. At Sam Houston State, some people can say Sam Houston State lost to Western Kentucky. I called that, by the way, if you weekend winners, 2-1 this weekend. But Sam Houston has a quarterback by the name of Gunnar Watson. He's been there for 3 years, three-year starter. He looked good week one against Western Kentucky. He can use his arm. He can use his legs. And then right after that, UNLV has to travel to or UCLA is going to be traveling to Vegas. You're going to have to see Nico Iamaleava and a UCLA team from the Big Ten directly after that. This defense better tighten up or they have no outside shot, in my opinion, of being a representative for the group of six. I was very disappointed by UNLV this past weekend.
Well, because it wasn't just their passing defense. It was the run defense, too. Like, they gave up 160 rushing yards, 395 passing yards, and no disrespect to Idaho State, the Bengals. They should never, ever have 380 yards against a team like UNLV through the air. Now, UNLV's saving grace was they turned the ball over and over and over again.
Yes.
Like, they were able to get three interceptions, which was massive for UNLV.
Four picks.
Did they have four? I thought it was three.
Yeah, it was four picks.
Oh, my God. Yeah, they got lucky because the timely picks and their offense still looked pretty good. But, again, it's Idaho State, so I'm not sure you can do a victory lap about having 539 yards.
Where if I'm Dan Mullen.
I mean, your offense got out-offensed by Idaho State.
If I'm Dan Mullen, I'm in that meeting room today saying, we had four turnovers and only beat an FCS opponent. Not middle-of-the-line Big Sky team, by the way, by seven. If we don't get one of those picks, we may lose that game. That is not what I expected from UNLV coming out. Now, they were supposed to have Zach Arnett, former coach at Mississippi State, as their defensive coordinator. He left due to personal reasons, so maybe that's an explanation you can look at for their defense being as bad as it was. But I don't think you have really any excuse if you're UNLV after this season of transfer portaling to be that bad against that opponent.
Will UNLV have DB tryouts this week?
They might need to.
They might need to.
They might need to take a take a page out of Memphis's book. Take a page out of Memphis's book. And then the final game I was paying attention to, Hawaii-Stanford. Hawaii wins.
Come on, Hawaii.
Vegas knows something.
Fired up about that.
Vegas knows something. 2.5-point favorites, Hawaii was. They won by 3. 38-yard field goal as time expired. Stanford completely shot themselves in the foot, though.
Yes.
And I thought that was an academic institution. I thought that was a smart institution. I thought everybody played at Stanford was supposed to have their wits about them. But before half, you had a sack that put Hawaii out of field goal range that stalled a drive. And instead of just running off the field, letting that be that, the defensive end that got the sack started oriforming, started doing the I don't know if you've seen the video out there of the kid on the front of the boat in the race that was doing all his dances, but that's what the Stanford defensive end does. They get a 15-yard penalty, and really, I think it was two plays later, Connor, there was a 19-yard touchdown thrown by Hawaii to take the lead before half, 14-13, and I know that the second half played out the way it did, but that's the play that you look back at and say, Stanford lost the game there. They had a chance to go into halftime up 13-7. Instead, they're down 14-13. That's a swing that you just can't make up for all the time.
Can you imagine being a Stanford player and having a penalty like that cost you the game and then having to look at Andrew Luck
and Frank Reich? That wouldn't be fun.
No, would not be fun.
But I'm starting to look at the Stanford situation, and I think we'll know more next season.
I mean, their quarterback was really bad, too.
Yes, and I didn't expect much from him.
It was terrible.
I think that their EPA per play is the worst in a decade when passing the ball. That's what it was this weekend. It was like minus 0.3 or whatever it was.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
But I know we won't have a full feel of Stanford football until they hire a full-time coach going into next year. Because for those that don't know, Frank Reich is just there as an interim one-year holdover because they had to fire Troy Taylor, their previous coach, due to bullying allegations at a bad time, right before spring football. But it's hard for me to imagine, based on what I just saw, based on the way things have headed post-David Shaw, that Stanford football can ever really recreate what was, I think, even in the 2000s, a pretty proud past, like a proud history.
Absolutely.
Christian McCaffrey, Bryce Love, Toby Gerhart, Andrew Luck. I mean, you go through all of these really, Zach Ertz was there as a tight end, like these really, really talented players that would go through Stanford. I didn't see any talent on their team this Saturday, and you lose to Hawaii, who was breaking in a new quarterback. And that's a team who hasn't been to a bowl game for going on 2 years. And that's a team that's in the Mountain West, sort of middle of the pack to lower tier Mountain West team. Stanford, I was asking going to the weekend, like, is Stanford lower tier power four, really bad power four, or are they middle of the pack group of six? They look like middle of the pack, lower tier group of six team. That's what it looked like. And I don't know what they do to right their wrongs, because it doesn't seem like they get a lot of investment into sports themselves. We know they have a big endowment. We know that the academic institutions always are invested in at Stanford. But in this house settlement, NIL, transfer portal era, they're falling behind, and they're falling behind at warp speed. And this was a program that 5 to 7 years ago was winning 10 to 11 games a year. Really 8 or 9 at the very least. It's tough to see. I mean, that was a brand there for a while in the 2010s. No longer that. No longer that at all. All right, now we're going to look forward to week one when we return from this break. But also, we have to get to the Memphis depth chart that was published today. Some surprises in there. And I would say not so welcome. Not so welcome when it comes to those surprises. That's next right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. Back into the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. Before we get into the Memphis depth chart, we did have a game week presser from Ryan Silverfield explaining the DB walk-on situation for those that did not tune in for the first segment. The University of Memphis on Saturday put out a shout to all University of Memphis students that they are hosting walk-on tryouts for DBs only. Ryan Silverfield has given an explanation, I am to understand, though. This is pretty recent, but this is what he had to say about it. Okay, one roster spot. They need scout team bodies is what I heard for the most part. I mean, a pretty fair explanation. And I think that in the house settlement era with the roster limits and all of the moving parts, I think there's a lot of group of six programs that are having similar struggles. I don't know if they've gone to the lengths of having a walk-on tryout for one roster spot, but here we are. I mean, it seems pretty straightforward, open and shut, no?
Yeah, I think the explanation that we thought it was where they're looking for help on the scout team because they probably had to elevate somebody. They have an extra roster spot, so you might as well get somebody in there that can just give reps to the offense.
Yep, for sure.
It's as simple as that.
All right, now, as far
but
as...
It is kind of funny. Because when you did... there was a moment where I opened up social media over the weekend, and I was like, what?
Yeah, exactly. Same reaction, same reaction I had. Just not normal. You have your walk-on tryouts usually June or July, probably, and it's not just, hey, we need DBs. You know, this is not a normal thing, but they need an extra body at DB, and that's how they're going to find it. Now, he did mention in the middle of that, you know, who knows? Maybe that guy could play this year.
The Kavanaugh
Center.
Settle down.
Now, listen, I have a good, there's a lot of good friends I had that came through the white shirt program is what they called it, which is the walk-on program. Chris Roberson was one who started 2 years at left guard for, or 1 year at left guard and 1 year at right tackle for us, and the transition from Fuente to Norvell. And then also Alan Cross is another name that came out of that whiteshirt program. So there's a decent history of guys being able to walk onto this team, do it the hard way, and ultimately make a difference. But the idea of a DB getting added to this roster the week of the first game and playing, I think, like Ryan sort of reiterated there at the end, chances of anyone being able to play this year coming out of that walk-on program, very slim.
But who knows, Gabe? Maybe Ed Reed is walking around the University of Memphis campus this week.
It's possible.
We never know.
Who knows? All right, now the depth chart for week one against Chattanooga has been published and put out. No surprise at quarterback, Brendan Lewis. I think what is notable about the quarterback position, though, you have Arrington Maiden, who's a redshirt freshman, and A.J. Hill, who is a true freshman, highest-rated quarterback recruit in the history of the University of Memphis football program. They're listed as Orrs as the backup, so there's no official backup. And I want to see, especially if Memphis gets up big in this game, I want to see both of those guys get a fair amount of playing time. And I do want to get a look in live action of A.J. Hill to see what he's learned already through fall camp. because I think that's what a lot of people want to see as well. You know, looking at the future and what he could potentially be if he is a guy who stays for 4 years and is a four-year starter, like Seth Hennigan. So that's the first thing I noticed. Running back, there was a clear order here, and it's not an or. Greg DeRozier Jr. is the starter. He will be the starter, and he showed us some really good things, catching the ball, running the ball between the tackles, running the ball off tackles. I think the jock strap of that Tulane linebacker is still there in New Orleans at Yeoman Field, at Yeoman Stadium. But Greg DeRozier is going to get the sort of workhorse runs and the workhorse, the big workload as the starting back. Sutton Smith will be behind him, but I would imagine both of these guys get a fair amount of run. And the reason I say that is because both of them are dynamic playmakers. Both of them have versatility as pass catchers. You can split them out into the slot. You can put them in a split backfield. You can do a lot of different things with both of these guys. They both have similar skill sets. So I would imagine both of them get plenty of run, but it was clear Greg DeRozier Jr. is going to be the starting running back. At wide receiver, the starters are listed as follows. Jerkari Caldwell, a transfer from North Carolina A&T. He's going to be the outside wide receiver, 6'4", 195, sort of the jump ball, strong guy. At slot, they will have Jamari Hawkins, who's a redshirt junior, who's been on campus for 3 years at this point, 5'9", 185 pounds, sort of a speedster, very quick. And then as the other wide receiver, sort of the movable wide receiver, you have Marcelo Bussey, who came out of Hutchinson Community College last season, was injured for most of the year, didn't really get to play, but they had high hopes for him, and he's coming off injury. They expect some big things. Brady Kluse, who came on at the end of last year, 6'2", 188, he was a freshman. He's now going to be a true sophomore. He will back up Marcelo Bussey as sort of that move in and out, that move wide receiver, if you will. Offensive line, you have the two returning starters, Chris Adams at left tackle and Malachi Breland at left guard. And then from center to right tackle, all new starters. Yakiri Walker is going to start at center from Colorado. So he's a transfer who has some experience at the FBS level. Parker Mitchell is from Richmond. They got him out of the transfer portal this offseason. 6'3". He's listed at 270. I hope he's a little heavier than that. He will play right guard. And then at right tackle, they have a mammoth of a man. I mean, just a big, big man from Florida International. He transferred in this offseason. Travis Burke, 6'9", 315 pounds. So I think this offensive line may be missing a little bit of size on the interior, but I think they make up for it with that right tackle position. 6'9", 315 pounds. Defensive side of the ball, only one returning starter, William Whitlow, who was going to get into the portal, but he ended up staying. He's one of their more experienced guys. So he's going to get the start at DN, but then you have all new starters. At the other defensive end, you'll have Jalen Bell, a transfer from Tennessee State. At nose tackle, Puda Walker, who's a transfer from Kennesaw State. At Sam, you have a slash. It's Drew Watts or Cam Burden. One, Drew Watts, is a transfer from Nevada. Cam Burden is a transfer from Charlotte. At Mike, Sam Brumfield, who I actually got to watch when he's from Pearl, Mississippi. He went to Northwest Mississippi Community College. I got to call his games when I was a color commentator over at Northwest. But he's coming from Virginia Tech. He has some good experience at Virginia Tech and Washington State. And he's a guy who's a thumper. I mean, just a straight-up thumper. I want to see him in pass coverage because that's a concern you do have about that type of guy. I mean, he's 5'11", 220, 230, somewhere around there. So you have to see how he's able to move around, stick to tight ends, things like that. But I will say, when it comes to run support, you should have no concerns about Sam Brumfield. He will be a guy who gets a lot of tackles in the middle of that defense. At Will, the transfer from UAB, who had 80 tackles last year, Everett Rousseau Jr., 6'3", 230. And then in the secondary, Omarion Cooper, transfer from Florida State, listed as a starter. Chauncey Logan Jr., listed as a starter, transfer from James Madison. Chris Bracey, transfer from UAB, listed as the starting safety. At the Tiger position, which is basically a strong safety, linebacker hybrid. Kamari Wilson is listed as a starter, transfer from Arizona State. And then Ashim Young is listed as the other starting safety. He's a transfer from North Texas. So we're in absolute transfer madness on the defensive side of the ball. And the expectation is anyone's best guess on the defensive side of the ball. I don't know at all what it's going to look like. I will say they have a lot of very quality transfers that were wanted by other schools. So I guess your hopes can be as high or as low as you want. But it's going to be a good learning experience week one coming up on Saturday against Chattanooga, just to see how it all comes together in a pretty short amount of time. A lot of these guys got here in spring. They've been learning since then. So we'll see how much they've been able to take in.
Well, I think all offseason, you've been preparing people, I think, almost for that first depth chart, because you've said, you know, this is more of a retooling season. This is a retooling season for Memphis. And then when you see this depth chart, you're like, oh, it's new starters at most of the positions.
Three returning starters.
Most of the positions have returning starters. And then a couple of things that stood out to me was the way that they are going to use Sutton Smith this season. You know, he's going to be on some kick returns, punt returns. And then there's no C.J. Smith listed.
Yes,
but that's I think that was the big omission probably from the first week.
But we did learn.
Right.
Ryan did give some explanation as to why Purdue transferred C.J. Smith, who was a four-star at a high school, committed to Georgia. Why he was not there, he's injured. And I'll be honest, it's a bummer.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's an absolute bummer. This was a guy who was on Bruce Feldman's college football freaks list for having squatted nearly 500 pounds. He was a 10-2 guy in the 100-meter in high school. He was a guy you expect a lot of, especially at this level, whether it's now routes or you know, as a deep threat downfield. You expected him to be maybe, you know, the leading receiver on this team. I know that Ryan has said – leading up to the season that they're going to have receiver by committee. They're going to play a lot of guys. But C.J. Smith was sort of the early leader in that group to be the guy that is the biggest difference maker because of the talent, because of all of the physical attributes he has at 6'2", 190. It was a bummer to see that he is injured and we don't really have a timeline for when he's going to be back.
Yeah, it's a huge bummer just because of what we already know what's going on with Memphis this season. But I do want to ask you about Sutton Smith and what can Memphis expect from him this season, and what would a big season from Sutton Smith do for Memphis?
Yeah, I'm very curious about it. I feel like they're going to have to rely on that running back room pretty heavily because of all the unknowns in that wide receiver room. C.J. Smith, we now know, is injured. That adds more unknowns to that wide receiver room. So I think that a good year for Sutton Smith would be right around 400, 500 yards rushing, and being able to catch for 300, 400 yards. And if he surpasses that, I feel like this offense will be pacing in a way better way than we thought. Because I think Greg DeRozier is going to be good as long as he can stay on the field. But, you know, here's the thing that is the unknown about Sutton. Sutton tore his ACL to start the season last year. How has he rehabbed? How much does he trust that injury? How much does he trust the staff to put him in the right situation post injury? That's something that I'm going to be paying attention to. But I expect him to make a pretty solid and rather big contribution to this offense, because I think he's going to have to be relied upon. considering the absence of experienced playmakers within the Tim Kramsey offense. He's one of the few guys that truly understands what's expected of him and has been around long enough.
Does it show any, like, is him doing kickoff returns and punt returns a vote of confidence in what his rehab has looked like?
I would imagine.
Okay.
I would imagine so. Greg DeRosier, I believe, is the kickoff returner as well.
They're both listed.
They're both listed. Yeah. And then Sutton's listed as the punt returner.
Yeah.
So I would imagine that the rehab process has gone well. He's fully cleared. But I think it's going to take us seeing him on the field and seeing if he can return back to form to the Iowa State Bowl game in the AutoZone Liberty Bowl a couple of years ago, where he had a really good game catching the ball, running the ball, and had a lot of production. So we'll see.
When you were playing and you had guys returning from major injury like that, was it the physical that was harder to get over, or was it the mental aspect that was more difficult?
It's nearly always, and it depends on the type of guy you have. If you have a senior who's gone through 4 surgeries on his knees, it's physical. Right, but knowing Sutton Smith has had this injury and that's sort of the start and finish of his injury history, I think it's more of the mental aspect, because you have not dealt with an injury like that before, so in turn you have not dealt with the rehab process and a surgically repaired knee. So I think it's going to be more mental for Sutton Smith. But in my experience, it depends on the player. If you have a guy who's had multiple surgeries, who barely has any structure left in his knees or his shoulders, it's always going to be physical. But when you're dealing with a guy like Sutton Smith, who has a short injury history, just this one massive injury, I think it's a mental hurdle that he's going to have to get over to trust cutting in the field turf, to be as sudden as he once was. It is a mental hurdle, but I'd imagine this entire fall camp, since he's been cleared, he's been able to get through a lot of that.
Yeah, I would have to imagine it'd be difficult. It's the cutting that would mess with me, I think, the most. It's
because what makes him good? It's being able to stop on a dime, yep, cut and change direction, be quicker than fast. And, you know, if you lose some of that, you're not the same player. But I would assume, just considering what ACL surgery and ACL rehab has become, we'll see a pretty close, if not at, full Sutton Smith by the time we get this season started on Saturday.
I certainly hope so. The running game for Memphis this season could be very good. With the quarterback and the two running backs that they have, could be something.
I think to start the year, it's going to have to be what they hang their hat on.
Because you don't know what you have with wide receivers, especially without C.J. Smith.
You have a quarterback who ran for nearly 800 yards,
right,
who's not necessarily a pocket passer by any stretch of the imagination. And you have two running backs who are very experienced, and that wide receiver room is completely different, and you're missing the biggest piece that you acquired this offseason in C.J. Smith to start the year. So yep, I'd imagine first couple of weeks, and they have a good lead-in because it's Chattanooga, Georgia State, and then Troy. First couple of weeks, first few weeks until that Arkansas game, I think that running game is going to have to find their footing, because I think you'll also need it against Arkansas. You're going to be needing to click on all cylinders by the time you get to that game at home.
What's the game plan like for a week one opponent? When it's one to the level of Chattanooga, is it you hold some stuff back and you're just kind of running basic stuff?
It's so much different depending.
Are you trying to build up the quarterback's confidence?
I'd say in the situation Memphis finds himself in, where the expectations are high, and you're going to get to week four and face a premier opponent at home, you don't want to put too much on film. That's my assumption for this team. Now, I dealt with Justin Fuente too when we were about to take off, and I believe we played Austin Peay, and we had everything at our disposal, and we didn't really keep it close to the vest. We ran everything in our playbook that game. I do know Norvell was completely different when it came to FCS games. He showed nothing. It was bare bones. Like, we ran absolutely none of our passing concepts, kept it to about 2 run concepts, and let's get going. And that's why I believe it's my junior year, we came close to losing to Southern Illinois because of that. So I think for this particular team, with all the new pieces, they'll try to keep some things close to the vest and then open it up as the weeks progress once they get into these FBS games. But for now, for this week one matchup, I'd imagine they try to keep it pretty Pretty simple. Pretty simple for everybody. But we need to go ahead and get into hour number two. We'll talk to David Cobb about week one, and we'll recap week zero as well. But week one is coming up. We have three top 10 matchups, Alabama, Florida State, bunch of good football coming up this weekend. We'll talk to David Cobb on the other side about it right here on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.